You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
22. Yeah. You're 732. You're 751. You're 776. Can I read your number on?
I'm 779. Excuse me.
You're 834.
Yeah.
You're 874.
Yeah.
You're 997.
Here.
You're 1014. You're 1024.
Yeah.
You're 1078. You're 1093.
Present.
And you're 1100. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. In this group, the court will note upon further review of questionnaires, there were two jurors excused. Juror 776, the court reviewed with counsel the questionnaire, and we released that juror based on bias expressed in the questionnaire. Does the state agree that there was a strike there that was confirmed by the court as to juror 776?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Does the defense stipulate also on that strike?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. One other juror we addressed was juror 1080, based on a hardship and some bias, was excused for cause. Does the state also make that motion at this time to excuse that juror for bias and hardship?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Does the defense stipulate?
Judge, yes, we do. Thank you.
All right. And the court, again, has reviewed questionnaires as to both, and finding the information in the questionnaire supports those challenges. Those jurors have been excused. We did have one other juror this morning who will be returning for the afternoon, and that was juror 977. So this time then, addressing the jurors again, to assist you in understanding and participating in the jury selection process, I'll introduce you to the lawyers and briefly summarize what the case is about. When I introduce an individual, please stand and briefly face the jury panel, then retake your seat. This case has been brought by the state of Idaho. I'll sometimes refer to the state as the prosecution. The state is represented at this trial by Lindsay Blake, Fremont County prosecutor, Rob Wood, Madison County prosecutor, Ingrid Beatty, specially appointed prosecutor, and Rocky Wixom, deputy Fremont County prosecutor. The defendant in this case is Chad Guy Daybell, and he's represented by his lawyer, Mr. John Pryor. This is a criminal case, meaning the defendant is charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of the law. I previously read to you a summary of the charges in the amended indictment when you were here last week to complete your questionnaires. With regard to the defendant, the state of Idaho has alleged that Chad Guy Daybell committed the following crimes. Count one, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count two, first-degree murder. Count three, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count four, first-degree murder. Count five, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Count six, first-degree murder. Count seven, insurance fraud. And count nine, insurance fraud. Mr. Daybell has pled not guilty to the charges. Please remember, this is simply a description of the charges. It is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crimes beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from a lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions. I will later give to those facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying the court's instructions as to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is or what the law should be or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, You are instructed you are not to discuss the case among yourselves or with anyone else, including talking to anyone or use of email, text messaging, social media, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. At this time, I'm going to request that our clerk administer an oath to the jury panel for the voir dire examination. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you would all please stand at this time and raise your right hand.
You solemnly swear or affirm that you will truthfully answer such questions as may be asked of you by court or counsel, touching upon your qualifications to sit as a trial juror in the Cosby Allen trial, so help you God.
Thank you. The clerk has now impaneled these 13 prospective jurors for questioning in a small group today. Will the attorney stipulate that the juries were properly called and impaneled, beginning with the state?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
That's
yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Court will also note that a juror affirmation has been filled out and signed by all the returning jurors without any issues noted. So these jurors have committed that they have not discussed the case or investigated the case since the time they have filled out their questionnaires last week. In this part of the jury selection, then, you're going to be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as the voir dire examination. Voir dire is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to the origins of the common law, and in Old French, it simply means to speak the truth. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold or by some personal experience or special knowledge which you may have concerning the subject matter to be tried. The object is to obtain 12 persons who will impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in this courtroom without being influenced by any other factors. Please understand this questioning is not for the purpose of prying into your personal affairs. Simply, it is for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Whenever you need to answer a question, please raise your red card or your hand. When you're called upon to speak, please make verbal responses to any questions so that we can take a record of what was said and try to avoid speaking over the top of any attorney questioning you. In addition, I'll note that this proceeding is being broadcast. You are not being filmed or videoed, but your audio is coming through on the court's broadcast, which is being streamed on an official court channel for public access. If you have any answer to a question that you think might be either embarrassing or uncomfortable to discuss in that public setting, please notify us before, and we will be able to discuss those issues with you in a private setting outside of public access. Similarly, if your answer to any question might prejudice other jurors, please refrain from making those kind of comments until we talk to you individually so that other jurors don't learn information you may already have about the case. This case has also had pretrial media coverage and publicity. So again, we will discuss any knowledge you may have individually and not here in the group setting. I'll now read to you a special instruction for this case as follows. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Vallow Daybell and or Alex Cox. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant in this case and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving the alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant has the presumption of innocence, and you must consider his guilt or innocence based solely on the evidence provided in this case. That concludes the court's special instruction. At this time, I'll also instruct the attorneys to please avoid repeating any questions already asked by the court. However, you do have the right to direct follow-up questions to a juror regarding that juror's response to previous questions. The jury should be aware that during and following the voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side has challenges called for cause, by which I mean that each side can ask that a juror be excused for a specific reason. In addition, each side has a certain number of peremptory challenges, by which I mean each side can challenge a juror and ask that he or she be excused without giving a reason for the dismissal. If you are excused by either side, please do not feel offended or feel that your integrity or your honesty has been questioned, because it is not. I'll also advise you, if you are excused from jury service after a challenge, then you may be approached to discuss this case. You are permitted to do that. However, I would ask you to be mindful of your fellow jurors and the fact that this court is trying to find impartial jurors in this case. And if you don't want to talk to someone about the case, you don't have to. And if someone persists in trying to talk to you, please report that to the court. At this time, then, I will begin the court's portion of the voir dire process, after which I'll allow attorneys for both the state and the defense to make their own voir dire inquiries. If we are discussing questions with any given juror, please pay attention to the questions and answers, as you may be called upon later to answer those same questions. The first question I'll ask is not in relation to the long questionnaire you filled out last week, but just your juror information form, which has information such as your residence in Ada County. I'll ask each one of the jurors now as a group, are the answers given by you in that juror information form still true and accurate? If so, please raise your red cards. All right, thank you. It appears all the jurors still have accurate juror information forms. The next question I'll go to is on your jury questionnaire. And those were last week. They were lengthy. Is there anything in there that you think needs to be corrected or clarified at this time that we wouldn't just discuss with you individually? All right, nobody appears to have any correction at the outset to the questionnaires. The next topic I want to discuss then involves the length of this trial. This will be a long trial. We're estimating a time frame of 8 to 10 weeks. I'd like to know if any of you believe serving for that much time would create a serious hardship upon you or your family or your business or profession or occupation to prevent you from rendering service as a fair and impartial juror in this case. So if you believe you have a hardship based on this time commitment, please raise your red card at this time. All right, we've got three on the back row. All right, we're going to take these up individually at this time now. So first juror we'll talk to about that will be juror number 834. All right, juror 834, you did talk about in your questionnaire concerns as to whether or not you would lose income and employment during this case. Can you explain what that hardship would be if you were required to serve? And you can remain seated if you wish.
Thank you very much. I'm a field service staff, 71, that's supporting on the send out bonuses. And that would be conflict so much of my work because I don't have anybody right now. So I'm touring hospital for Moise to get the city. So I don't know, so that would be difficult to be
if I have you been able to discuss with your employer the possibility that you might be required to serve on this jury?
I did.
And did they advise you anything about whether or not they could accommodate your service or provide pay if you were serving?
I just notified them because I didn't know I would be called because I just told them to stand by, so I haven't discussed after this yet.
All right, is this employment your sole source of income?
Yes.
All right, let me inquire, well, have the state asking Board Dyer on the issue of hardship, and then I'll allow the defense as well.
Your Honor, the state actually had it marked to discuss hardship with Juror 834. I had noted that he had listed that in the questionnaire. I think we've been provided more information today regarding whether or not there's ability to provide coverage for him. Given everything that was in the questionnaire and indicated today on the record, the state would make a motion to remove this juror for cause based on hardship.
That response from the defense.
Judge, I also reviewed facts, and I would also move to excuse this juror for hardship.
All right. Based on that, the court's also reviewed the information in the questionnaire, finding that for this particular juror, service of that time frame would create a serious hardship financially for the juror and his family. And so for that reason, juror number 834, you'll be excused with the thanks of the court. Thank you for filling out your questionnaire last week and coming back. I'll have you drop a copy or your questionnaire with the bailiff and then your excuse from jury service. So next talk to juror number 874. You stated in your questionnaire you thought the financial strain would create a distraction for you if you were required to serve for that much time. Can you explain that a little more?
I would be going without income for all that except 1 week of the trial, and that creates financial.
Have you talked to your employer about the possibility that you'd be serving for this case? And did they indicate any policy of allowing for service or pay during your jury service?
They would allow the service, but there would be no issue.
All right, and I may be confused there. So they're not paying you income. In other words, they'll hold your job but not pay you while you're here? All right, did they have any time frame they could pay you that you're aware of?
For 40 hours, so like.
Okay. And is that your sole source of income?
Yes.
Any questions for this juror on the hardship issue?
No, Your Honor. Similarly, we had it marked to follow up with this juror regarding the indication for potential hardship in the questionnaire. Given that additional information, the state would make a motion to remove this juror for cause based on hardship.
Response from the defense.
Judge, I'd also concur the state's motion for hardship. It has to be excused.
All right, juror 874, given your explanation here today and the length of this trial, you'll also be permitted to be excused from your jury service for the expression of the hardship. And so the court thanks you for filling out your questionnaire and taking the time to come back today. Please drop that off with the bailiff and you can be excused. Juror number 1014.
I'm looking to offer this I'm working two jobs and I'm in school full time, and so doing a 10-week trial would be very difficult for me to meet deadlines for in college, and then also for one of my jobs I would be able to have like a fund set aside, but for one I do not.
All right, are you currently in a semester in school then?
Yes.
And are you full-time or part-time student? All right, if this trial were taking up pretty much all of your time and energy, if you were serving with that for that length of time, would you end up losing the semester basically, do you think?
I would think so. It's pretty busy semester.
And when does the semester end?
It ends in April, the very end of April.
Questions on Board Dyer from the state, please.
Your Honor, similarly, we had it marked to follow up with juror 1014 based on some indication of a potential hardship. And given all the additional information today, as well as what was stated in the questionnaire, the state would make a motion to remove this juror for cause based on hardship.
All right, response from the defense.
Judge, I would also concur in that motion. Excuse this juror.
All right. Juror number 1014, the court has considered the motion to strike as well as the information contained in your questionnaire and your responses today, and I do find that service for that length of time would create a serious hardship upon you. So for that reason, you'll be excused with the thanks of the court also. If you'll please drop your questionnaire with the bailiff, it will give you instructions. All right. Did we have another card raised by 1024?
This is
all right. Juror 1024, you raised your card as well and mentioned something in your questionnaire about a trip coming up in late May. Could you explain that, please?
Correct. Yeah, I have a family trip that my parents have been planning for a while. That starts May 25th, and we've already booked plane fare and hotels. And so, yeah, certainly, if it ran into that, that would be a problem. It's, you know, my kids are gone, my wife and my parents. So.
All right. If we did go into that time frame then, and we were coming up near that, do you think that would start creating a distraction for you and paying attention to the case here?
I mean, certainly it would be a challenge. I mean, since it's a pre-planned trip, I mean, if the trial happens before that, that's fine. I don't have any financial hardship otherwise than that. So my income isn't dependent on a specific job that I show up to. It's dependent on some investments. So, yeah, it's just the trip itself. So it's, I haven't honestly looked to see, I mean, rescheduling it would be rather challenging. So that would be the main issue. So, I mean, certainly if the trial is less end before that, then that's fine. But.
All right, I'll have the state inquire.
Your Honor, this is also a juror that the state had marked to follow up with, given what was indicated in the questionnaire regarding that trip. It sounds like where that trip is planned and the current estimation of time on this trial, I think the state would make a motion to allow this juror to be removed for hardship.
A response from the defense.
Judge, may I have permission to one matter?
You may.
Sir, I noticed that you have a couple of kids. If I remember right, a 10 and 12 year old. Is that?
I have the 11 and 12 year old. Yes, correct.
And 12, sorry.
Yeah, so it's a trip at the basically the end of school, right?
Right. It's a family trip that involves the grandparents as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And if you were fulfilling your obligation to be on a jury at that time, would it be safe to say that you would probably be distracted by your children and everybody else on the trip while you were trying to go through this process, and maybe would be anxious to move this process along while you're thinking about them while they're on that trip?
I mean, certainly if they went on the trip and I was still here, that would be, I mean, my kids are fairly independent, but it would, I mean, any parent would be nervous about their children traveling, but I mean, my wife would be on the trip with my parents. So, I mean, certainly they're not going to not go because I can't go.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, certainly, before the trip, you know, that's fine, but it's just during the trip.
Well,
that would be a challenge because, you know, just making sure, I mean, they're going to Boston. And so, you know, just all the logistics of moving two children around a large city would certainly be.
Well, I guess I was really concerned about the emotional impact that it might have on you, the fact that this is a long scheduled family trip with extended family and celebration of your kids getting done with school, and I read about that. And I guess what I'm concerned about is that potentially this could be a significant distraction. That's what I'm concerned about.
A significant distraction before the...
If you were to go here, and the indications, at least what I'm getting, is that there's a likelihood that children may go on this trip, and you're going to be, if the case goes until the 25th, I think that could be a distraction. That's what I have a concern about as well.
I understand your question, and I would say up until the point of the trip, as long as the trial ends before that, it's not an issue for me. It's just if the kids went on the trip. So, yeah, that's the only issue. I mean, if the trial ends before that, that's fine. I mean, not a problem. So it's just, yeah, if the kids going on the trip and me not being there, with it being a busy city, and then, you know, them having to navigate with my wife and parents, grandparents, as you would imagine, any father, you know, would be concerned. I mean, it's pretty common. So,
and Judge, based on the responses, at this point, I'm going to move for cause as well. And ask that the court excuse this juror.
All right. The parties have both made the challenge for cause for an expressed hardship. The court will grant the challenge, and juror 1024 is excused. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You are remaining here and have expressed a willingness to commit this extensive time for your service.
Your Honor, I'm sorry, but may I as well?
Very well. Juror 1093.
I am the primary provider, caregiver for two young children, 6 and 8, and they homeschool. At the beginning of this, the time frame was stated at 8 weeks, and I assumed it would be starting a little sooner. There is definitely the ability for me to put my kids into public school to cover that. But as time has gone on, and with the possibility for this trial to be longer, 10 weeks or more, if that should happen, it would definitely be a difficulty for us for childcare, as I take care of the kids and the farm, and we're out wanting them to.
All right. And when you say the farm, could you just describe a little bit more about what responsibilities you would have there at your homestead?
Sure. We have 5 acres and we raise sheep and chickens. Lambing is coming up soon. We're going to have baby lambs. And we grow a lot of our own food and raise meat birds.
Okay. And there is a potential of this case going into the time frame you were discussing. So let me get some additional voir dire input from the state.
Your Honor, this, I think given that information, the state does not have any additional questions. With all of that going on and the described hardship, the state would make a motion to remove this juror for cause based on hardship.
Mr. Pryor.
Judge, I would agree with the state. Ask that she be excused for hardship.
All right. Reviewed your questionnaire, juror 1093. Also looked at makeup of your family and what you've got going on with your children as well. And so for those reasons stated and what you've indicated on the record today, we'll allow you to be excused for your hardship request. Court does find that it would constitute a hardship for you to serve for that time period. So thank you for taking the time to complete your questionnaire and coming back today. You can be dismissed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, for the remaining jurors then, we're going to shift topics to something else. The next issue is whether or not you have any knowledge of this case from previous media coverage or otherwise. You've heard a summary of the charges that are contained in the amended indictment. Other than what you've learned here so far in the court proceedings, do you know anything about the case? And if you do, please raise your red card. All right, and we've got several people, hold those up for a minute. We are going to talk to you individually about your knowledge of the case a little later this morning. So I won't ask you any details about what you know. We'll talk to you about that one by one. And 7 by 1 also. Thank you. Let me next address the subject matter of the charges here. In this case, you've heard what the charges are, but that subject matter of this case involving charges of murder, conspiracy, and insurance fraud make it difficult or impossible for you to fairly and objectively evaluate the evidence in this case and render a fair and impartial verdict. All right, no one answered affirmatively. I'll next ask a series of questions that seem like they should be very obvious if we looked at your questionnaires, which we did, but I'm required to go through these on the record to satisfy certain statutory requirements, making sure you don't have any connections to parties involved in the case or the defendant. So with that in mind, first question on that topic is, are any of you related by blood or marriage to the defendant, Mr. Daybell, or do you know him from any kind of business or social relationship? No one answered yes. Do any of you have a legal relationship of some kind with any of the attorneys in this case, such as guardian and ward, master and servant, employer and employee, creditor, debtor, landlord and tenant, boarder or lodger? No one answered yes. Are any of you a party in any civil action or lawsuit against the defendant? No one said yes. Have any of you ever brought a criminal complaint against the defendant, Mr. Daybell, or have you been accused by any of the prosecutors here today of any crime? Okay, no one answered yes there. Do any of you have any attorney-client relationship, either now or in the past, with Mr. Pryor or his law firm? No, and just to be clear, that's the defendant's attorney again. No one answered yes. Are any of you related by blood or marriage to any of the lawyers in this case, or do you know any of them from any kind of professional, business, or social relationship? No one answered yes to that. Have any of you ever formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that the defendant is guilty or not guilty of the offense charged? No one answered yes to that. Do any of you have any type of bias or prejudice, either for or against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? No one answered yes. Is there anyone here that is unwilling to follow my instructions to you as the jury as to the law that you must apply in determining the case? No one said yes to that. Do any of you have a religious or moral position that would make it impossible for you to sit in judgment of another or to render fair and impartial verdict? All right, no one answered yes to that. Are there any of you that, if you were a juror on this case, would be unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in the courtroom and the law instructed by the court? All right, no one said yes. A final question then. Do any of you have any other reason why you believe you would not be able to give this case your undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? All right, no one answered yes to that. So that concludes the court's section of voir dire. I'll next allow the state to commence with its voir dire, and after that, the defense may do so as well. Who's going to be conducting voir dire of this panel this morning?
I will be, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Flake, if you'd like to commence, you may.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being here with us this morning. I know this process has already been somewhat lengthy. You were all here last week and you filled out a questionnaire, and now we brought you back this week. So I want to thank you for sticking with us through this process. As we go through this, and just to kind of let you know a little bit about what we're doing here, is we're trying to ensure that we go through an extensive process to make sure that we get jurors that truly feel that they can sit on a jury in this matter and provide a fair and impartial verdict, and that they feel that they can see that duty through. Because there's a few reasons for that. The defendant, Chad Daybell, deserves a fair trial, and so does the state of Idaho. So that's why we go through this process, to just make sure that we get there. If I use the term brutal honesty, I'm going to ask juror 1100, what comes to mind if I use the term brutally honest, if someone wants someone else to be brutally honest?
I think for me, brutally honest means that you have to be truthful in all aspects, and that you need to be not hiding any of the pieces. That you, as difficult as it may be, you need to be able to articulate what occurs. But brutally honest.
Thank you. I appreciate that response. And your 751. How about you?
Speaking the truth and living the truth. You can't find other things.
And would everyone agree that it could also include not worrying if you're hurting someone else's feelings? That you just, it can't be a little white lie. It's just got to be, it's what it is. Thank you for that. And the reason I bring that up is there's a couple things with that. So today, obviously, I'm asking you questions. I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable or put you on the spot, but we're just going through this process. And as we go through it, we want everyone to be brutally honest with us. If there's something you think we should know, tell it to us straight today. And the second part is, if you're selected to be on this jury, you're going to be given instructions by the judge. And when it's time, he would let you know that you could begin discussing things with the other jurors. And we want to make sure that everyone feels that they can be brutally honest, that they can be truthful with everyone as they're going through the process. So could everyone today commit that they can be brutally honest as we go through this? I see everyone shaking their heads and some audibles. Thank you so much for that. And one other thing I'll mention, the judge also mentioned this, but as we go through this process, if at any point there's something that you want to discuss without everyone present, let us know and we can work with the court to make those arrangements. I recognize sometimes there's sensitive subjects and they may be things that I don't even realize are sensitive. So I want to make sure everyone knows that. We want to be respectful as we go through this. Has everyone here been on a plane before? Everyone's nodding yes. When you get on a plane, usually at some point you get an announcement over the PA system. You know, sit back, enjoy your flight. We're going to take off. We'll arrive at the destination at approximately such and such time. And they take off. If instead of hearing something like that, you got on the plane and the pilot told you, I'm going to try to land the plane. I think we'll be there at this time. How many of you would feel comfortable on that plane? I'm seeing people shake their heads no. And can I ask juror 779, would you want to stay on that plane? Why not?
Because of fear for my life. Because I know the pilot was not experienced if he said something like that.
And juror 1078, how about you?
I agree. I would definitely not feel assured hearing an announcement.
Thank you. And the reason I ask that is because we're basically going to ask you all to be the pilot with this case. So again, we talk about it, but the judge will give you instructions. And at some point, it will be up to you to make a decision in this case and render a verdict that you believe is the correct verdict. And does everyone here feel that they could do that, that they could sit on this jury and at the end of it, listen to all the evidence, give it the weight you think it's due, deliberate, and ultimately render a verdict that you felt was the best verdict? Thank you for that. So the other part of this, and the judge has gone over what the charges are in this case, and we have several counts of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, and we also have several counts of first-degree murder. The victims in this case involve two minor children and a mother of five. As we go through this, the state has the burden of proof, and as part of that, we present evidence. Some of the evidence may include some photos that are unpleasant. They may be graphic autopsy photos of children or that mother. Does anyone, as they sit here today, have concerns that if they were to see graphic images like that that are unpleasant, that it would cause you concerns about your ability to still sit on this jury? And juror 722, I think you have children. I believe they're adult children.
Yes.
Being a mother, does that cause you any concern, or do you feel you'd be able to look at those images and provide them the way you think they're due?
I think that's a fair question, because you see things on TV and it's kind of like more hypothetical. But I believe I can. I believe it's significant enough of a thing that I will be able to confront.
And do you feel like even if they maybe elicited a reaction from you, that you would still be able to weigh them fairly in light of the other evidence?
I would.
Thank you. And your 732, I'll ask you as well. I think you also have children, adult children. Same question. Does that cause you any concern?
It causes me no concern for my impartiality. It causes me concern for sleep and mental health. But it does not cause me.
Thank you. And just to follow up on that, because it's normal to be disturbed by these. It's normal to have whatever reaction we have as a human to images that are unpleasant. But anything about maybe having an emotional reaction or losing some sleep that would make you think you would, for any reason, give them more weight. Thank you for that. So I have a young kid, and when we get up in the mornings, if I ask him what he wants for breakfast, 9 times out of 10, it's cheesy eggs. But there's a very specific recipe that he likes me to follow. and it's simple, but it's what he likes. So it's the eggs and the milk and the cheese and the salt and pepper. And if I don't follow that recipe, sometimes he's not very happy with me. And sometimes I might modify it because maybe he wants a little bit of extra cheese in it. Can others relate with having someone, whether it's a kid or someone else that maybe has a very specific recipe or a very specific way they like things done? And Juror 716, I see you nodding along. Have you had a similar experience?
Yes, I have. I mean, I have two kids, so our three kids, one lives with me still. And I've been in that situation.
And do you end up a lot of times just following what that kid may want?
Sometimes, I wouldn't say all the time.
Do you sometimes modify it?
Yes.
And Juror 722, I saw you also nodding. Is it similar for you?
Yeah, just, or I remember the two-year-olds and three-year-olds, you know, they think they know what they want, and then, of course, you do it, and then they change their mind, and somehow you cut it wrong.
Yeah. Yes. I have been there as well. So with that, so we all kind of have recipes that we follow for certain things, and sometimes we might tweak them in our everyday lives. Maybe a kid wants something done a little bit different. Maybe we think we can make it better. But in this case, the judge is going to give us all, or you all, jury instructions. And those jury instructions will include an instruction on the elements of each crime that the state has to prove. And kind of like ingredients, they're going to be listed out. And unlike real life, where we might say, I might tweak this a little bit, or I might add this or take this away, you're not going to be able to do that. Whatever the judge gives you as the instruction, that's it. Does anyone have concerns that if you look at that and you think, oh man, I don't like this element, or why don't they have to prove this too? Could everyone commit that they'll just follow what's given by the judge? Does anyone have concerns about that? Thank you. With some of these charges, with the murder charges, there's going to be elements listed out in those instructions given by the court. And with regard to homicide, it's going to say the defendant engaged in conduct which caused the death of a person. There is not going to be an element on there that says the state has to prove the cause of death. So essentially, state has to prove they did it, there was a murder, but we don't have to prove how the person actually died, what the actual cause was. Does that cause anyone concerns, or would you be able to follow the instructions as given by the court? So people are nodding along that they could follow the instruction. Thank you. Do we have anyone here that's an NFL fan? I see one hand. Some people kind of say maybe. Juror 997, you're an NFL fan?
Yes.
I think Kansas City Chiefs won this year.
Good.
And you may or may not be happy about the outcome.
We'll talk later.
Yeah. I won't make you publicly disclose. I know some people hold those things very dear. But regardless of your feelings on it, do you feel that every person on the Kansas City Chiefs deserves to get a Super Bowl ring if they were part of the team?
Absolutely.
And with that, so even if the quarterback maybe played a bigger role, should the second string players also get a ring?
Yeah.
Coaches?
You bet.
And why should they all get a ring, in your opinion?
Because they all participate. It's a team effort.
Thank you. And Juror 751, I'll ask you the same thing. Do you think they should all get a ring?
Yes.
And what's your reasoning behind it?
They work together. They build their together. It's make one person to follow.
Thank you. The judge already gave you an instruction today, and he'll give you a lot more instructions as we go through it. The instruction today dealt a little bit with conspiracy. And the judge has already said conspiracy includes an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. He also instructed you that you would not consider the co-conspirators, what may or may not be going on with any cases with them, or their guilt or innocence with regard to this trial. So with regard to Lori Ballo Daybell and Alex Cox, you wouldn't consider those things. However, in this trial, you will hear evidence regarding actions alleged to have been taken by those two. And as I said, the conspiracy itself, an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. And then again, the judge will give you the specific instructions, but it also includes that then only one person has to, but any one person that's part of that agreement takes one act in furtherance of it. So just one overt act, one act to try to commit the crime that they all intend to commit. All of them don't have to do an act. Does anyone have concerns here today that if person A and B or A, B, and C agree to commit a crime and only person B does an additional act, does anyone have concerns still holding person A and C accountable if you believe the state proved there was an agreement that they and they intended to commit a crime? Does that cause anyone concerns? Thank you. So, and today it did actually rain. But let's say that as you were on your way here today, the sky was just gray. It was starting to turn gray. You came here in the courtroom. They closed the blinds. You couldn't see outside. And you go outside after court, and there's water all over. So water on your car, water on the grass, water on the pavement. You start driving home. Everything's wet. You see a rainbow in the sky. Would you be able to determine what had happened? And juror 732, what would you determine had happened?
Rain, a moisture, snow, rain.
Something had happened, some kind of precipitation, moisture had come from the sky. And juror 1100, how about you?
Yeah.
And you would be able to make that determination without ever having seen it rain. So, in the trial, you may see different types of evidence, and you may hear the term circumstantial evidence. Does anyone here have concerns considering all the evidence presented and weighing it and not worrying about what type of evidence it is, whether it's circumstantial or other? Does anyone here have, because knowing the nature of the charges, does anyone have in their mind a specific type of evidence that you think the state would have to show or that you would expect us to show in this case? I don't see anyone saying yes. And again, just can everyone commit that you would follow any instructions as given by the court? And would everyone agree that even if someone tried to convince you or try to tell you that the instruction was different than it was, would everyone commit you'll only follow what the judge tells you? Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Judge, could we approach for a minute?
Yes. Yes.
Council President, Your
Honor. Thank you. Please be seated. We're back on the record on CR 22-21-1623, State versus Chad Guy Daybell. The state just concluded its four-dire examination of the group. Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to commence with the defense you made.
Judge, I may approach the podium.
Yes.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John Pryor. I introduced myself to you folks earlier, and I represent Mr. Daybell. The reason we're here today is because Mr. Daybell has stated to the court and now to all of you that he's entered a plea of not guilty. The part of this voir dire, the French word that the judge used, is really an opportunity for all of us to get to know each other a little bit. Would everybody agree that we all have different experiences in our lives? We all have different biases. Some of us have job biases. Some of us have occupational biases. We try not to do this, but some of us have religious bias towards certain people, and that can be problematic as well. But what we are trying to do is get to meet you folks, trying to understand what your opinions are, how you feel about a variety of issues. And Ms. Blake did a very nice job of talking to you a little bit about that with some of the discussion about cheesy eggs and I think airplanes. And I'm going to talk to you about a few things as well. But before we start, I think Ms. Blake talked about this a little bit as well, it's really important that you speak your mind. It's really important that you say how you feel about an issue, because quite frankly, I probably have 10 or 15 minutes to get to know you folks and decide. Both of us are trying to say, okay, these jurors are the folks based on their experience. All of the things in their life are the ones who would really be the best jurors to give us a fair trial. And that's really what we're trying to do, have a fair trial. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. And I don't want you to think that these questions are designed to suggest that Chad is guilty. I have to ask you the questions because I have I have to delve into this. And again, if there's anything that you don't like or anything that you feel uncomfortable about, just stop and say, John, hold off. We're going to talk to the judge privately, and I don't want this. I don't want to talk about this in a more private setting. And everybody, is everybody okay with that? Okay, thank you. So I'm going to go down a couple of the questions, and I'll cover some other items. But just basically, when you heard the charges read, did anybody just assume, well, he must be guilty because of the charges? Raise your cards if you think that. Okay. Does anybody believe that Chad has to testify in this case? Does anybody believe that Chad has to testify and prove to you folks that he's innocent? Do all of you folks understand that Chad doesn't have to put on one bit of evidence? Does everybody agree with that? Just pop your hands up or cards, whatever you're comfortable with. Everybody understands that. And if Chad doesn't put on any bit of evidence, you can't hold that against him. Does everybody understand that? Thank you. I want to talk to you a little bit about the media and your opinions on the media. Would everybody agree that the media has a tendency to maybe inflame things? Raise your hand if you think the media has a tendency to sensationalize or inflame things. All of you agree with that. Does anybody believe for a second that you get the whole story from what you hear in the media? Would you raise your hand just so I can see? And I guess I'd like to talk, I think what I'll do is I'll start with 1078. Talk to me a little bit about what your view is, the media's role in a case like this.
I guess the media definitely uses it as a story, not so much fact case.
Okay. And we'll go over to juror 997. What is your thoughts on the media?
I try to avoid it as much as possible.
Okay.
Because I agree, whether it's local or national, I don't think you're getting all the specifics or all the facts. There's a reason why I think the media chooses stories, whether it's for clicks, whether it's for viewers, whether it's for attention, whether it's to get their name out there to the population.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you said clicks and attention, and quite frankly, a lot of it is the greater sensationalism and the more viewers, what does it really come down to? Right?
Absolutely.
Comes down to money, right? So when the media is sensationalizing and calling somebody a name and making a suggestion or stirring something up, really they're hoping everybody watches what they have to say. They're hoping that this is a way for them to gain readership, and the bottom line is it's all about money. 779, you're shaking your head, you're acknowledging it. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, I think it's kind of been explained. I agree with what the past jurors have said. A lot of the time, I think journalists try to make a story, not always make it as factual, or if it is factual, maybe not leave in all the facts, just try to make a story for people that catch their attention.
And would everybody agree that we shouldn't convict or judge somebody based on all of these outside influences? Would everybody agree with that? Okay. And I want to talk to you a little bit about some terms. Okay? Now, the judge already instructed you that the case is about facts and evidence. Okay? Facts, evidence. Does everybody understand what I mean by facts and evidence? Is there anybody who doesn't understand? The car is red. The car was seen not stopping at the stop sign. Fact, evidence. Okay? Is it fair to judge anything by other than fact and evidence if you're making a major decision in any regard? Okay.
And I'm going to go to juror 751 because you're the first and you really shook your head strongly. So talk to me a little bit about facts and evidence.
It's locally very black and white, but also gray. You're asking us to disregard the gray. The court's asking us to look at what's presented and what's evidence and to weigh that against the top of what's talk.
You have a wonderful voice, but you said something that's very important. The court is asking us to consider the facts and the evidence. That's it, right? Does everybody agree with that? Facts and evidence? 722. Is it about facts and evidence?
Yes.
Okay. So, I'm not going to pick on Ms. Blake, but I want to use her example because it's important. It's important because if we're looking at making a major decision and we're trying to guess whether that plane's going to crash or not, and we have to make a major decision, should we be basing it on speculation? Ever? Should you be guessing about what facts may be? Ever? Does everybody understand what the term conjecture means? It's a big word. And I try to avoid big words. Does anybody not know what conjecture means? Okay. Would everybody agree that speculation, conjecture, and guessing are pretty much the same words? Is there anybody who would disagree with that? Okay. We all have to make major decisions in our lives, very serious decisions, things that can affect us long term. Serious decisions, and all of us have had to make, I would assume all of us have had to make those serious, serious decisions. When we're looking to make major decisions, it's important to look at the facts. Would everybody agree with that? Would everybody agree that we should not engage in conjecture or speculation or guessing? Now, this judge read us an instruction. And aside from anything else, more than anything else, we listen to him. I will listen to him. I promise you I will listen to him. And the court, I'm going to commit you and ask you to commit to listen to him as well. And the prosecutors will listen to him. And when Judge Boyce gave you that special instruction, he talked about not taking anything on the outside and looking at those outside influences, okay? And what I'm looking to see if what you folks could do is commit to something and commit that we're not going to look at what the media people say. Can everybody commit to that? We're not going to commit to conjecture, speculation, and guess. Everybody commit to that? And we're going to commit to looking at just the evidence that's presented during the trial and the facts that are presented in the trial when we make a decision. Can everybody commit to that? And I want to thank you for that, folks. Thank you. A couple of other things.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.